There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1054, July 29th, 2024, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Republic Aviation had F-105 Thunder Chief. LCH has F-105 Grand Prix wins. He is the winning chief. Royal Flush from King George. Binotto is back. House cleaning at Audi F1. We shall explain very gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, happy birthday, Fernando. Happy birthday to you. Usted es el más macho, and we do love you. Science. Science with Williams. Seriously? But is this a sign that Williams may be hiring a popular car designer? We shall see. And lucky LCH wins when he doesn't win. It's fantastic. And this week's interviews, ladies and gentlemen, we got some big ones. Luca Badoer, of course, everybody's favorite Ferrari test driver, and Maria Guidotti, head of communications for the Mugello circuit and MotoGP. And just that friendly reminder, everybody, that yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program up on the cloud. So please click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Nas, I know you're pumped up. LCH wins 105th Grand Prix of his career. George goes down in flames, but Mercedes is back at the top, sort of. What do you think?
Well, what I think, what we saw on Sunday on the track, was one of the greatest races and victories, in my very humble opinion. What a performance from George Russell, holding off his teammate on tires that he changed on lap 10. Simply incredible. For Lewis to close about a 6-second gap with 10 laps to go, and then not being able to pass him in the final few laps, despite having DRS, this was just so unbelievable to watch. It's not like George was being chased by Sargent in a Williams or Bottas in a Kick Sauber. This was the most successful driver in the history of Formula One. Russell's performance par excellence cannot be devalued with the disqualification that came later for car being under the minimum weight requirement. I am sure it sucks for George, but what can you do? Rules are rules. Ayrton Senna lost a race and championship after being disqualified for not re-entering the track as per regulations after his "let's get physical" with lay professor at Suzuka. So this was a tremendous performance. Very sorry for George. But your thoughts on Russell's machismo performance and disqualification?
Well, it was a machismo performance, not only for George, but for the Pirellis. I mean, they've done a lot of work to that Mercedes to be so gentle on those tires. And, everybody was impressed, especially since they had recently repaved the circuit and we had a very abrasive situation. So I was stunned. And so when you think about it, it's the last lap. He's on tires that have been on there since, like you said, lap 10. And the greatest, not Muhammad Ali, but close, LCH could not pass George? I don't know. I have this strange feeling in my gut, but I'm going to keep it all to myself. But I thought it was bizarre. Also, once again, I just want to wish Fernando a happy and wonderful birthday.
Fernando Alonso. Ah, 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 ah. Fernando Alonso. Ah, ah, ah,
ah. And I will tell you this. I watched the, which I do with all the races, the immediate post-race interview, and LCH was looking like shell-shocked big time. I have never seen him like this when he finished a second to Rosberg or Max or anybody, but Sunday he was shell-shocked by his own teammate. And sir, equally amazing was the hombre who started on the front row and finished seventh. Who could that be? And more amazing than all of this is the fact Max has not won a race in the last four Grand Prix. First time in 4 years he has gone that long without winning a race. He was not even on the podium at Spa, where he won last year from sixth on the grid, and in 2022 he won after starting 14th, and he had also won in 2021, so he was going for four in a row. But I have to say, Max would have probably won this race had he not gotten that 10th place grid penalty. But then again, rules are rules, and but a tremendous, very, very exciting Grand Prix, and I really loved every minute and every lap of it. You have anything else to say, sir, before we do a quickie on Collie? You can wish Alonso happy birthday one more time.
That's true, Fernando. Feliz Navidad.
Because, you know, once is never enough with a man like that.
Suffering, let's face it. I mean, look at what Aston Martin is doing. Absolutely nothing. We had a nice 2023 season, and now I feel bad for Fernando, but he's 43 years old now, so the end is near. The final curtains will be drawn shortly.
Okay, so we look at Colli now. Pace of Max in free practice and qualifying was impressive, and of course, what is expected from this combo. Ruthless and relentless. Taking this into consideration, I was expecting Max to fight for the win from his 11th starting position, especially at Spa, where he was looking, like I said, for four in a row. Leclerc qualifying second was impressive. It was here where he scored his first Grand Prix win back in 2019, and Max's grid penalty promoted him to pole position. And I believe Ferrari was on pole at Spa for the last 3 years. Checo would share front row with him. Row 2 was Fish and Chips, Hamilton and Norris. Row 3, Piastri and Russell. Row 4 was Sangre Española, Carlito ahead of Nando. And row 5 was Ocon and Albon. Anything you liked or impressed you in qualifying, sir?
Everybody was just looking forward to the Grand Prix. I was really impressed with Leclerc putting in a really good lap that he didn't even expect. And Perez, of course, I figured we were going to have a great show, especially with Max starting P11. We did get a good and exciting Grand Prix. So, yeah, quali was fine. But now Max knows these penalties now hurt. Like last year, we would go, 10 place grid penalty. A year ago, 2 years ago, was nothing for Max. Now, it's brutal. So things have changed. They're slow. We'll see what happens.
Yes, and speaking of race, this was my train of thought before the race started. A, Sergio Perez will not win this race. B, based on past trends, Charles on pole position means he will not be on the top step of the podium after the race. C, within a few laps, Max will be in the top five, and it will only take a safety car situation for him to get into possibility of winning, which is what I was expecting, frankly speaking. D, papayas will be peeling fast laps. E, as you know, E is for electrifying. Since you and I are wired differently, I was not expecting F to win the race. What was your locomotion saying as the cars were rolling on formation lap?
To be honest with you, I looked at that formation And my thoughts were, and I knew the Mercedes were quick in race pace. I thought LCH could win this race. That was my first thought. Believe it or not.
No, I frankly did not expect them to win. I thought it would be either Max or the McLaren boys. And all the Q3 qualifiers, meaning top 10 starters, were on mediums except for Sainz Jr., who started on hard tires. Charles Leclerc shot into the lead as the lights went out at Spa. LCH got the jump on Checo, but I have to say Numero Dos put up a good fight, at least on the opening lap, and even got ahead of Lewis, I think once or twice briefly. But LCH was in the mood for business, and his business is winning races. And closing in on Leclerc, on lap 3, it was Arrivederci, amigo. Same lap, Guan Yu Zhou was done for the day in his Kicksauber. I have a question for you. You know, all these teams, even back of the bus, right? They have over $100 million budget. They spend so much money in this thing and that thing, CAD, testing, whatever they do. And they get their cars done, blowed up within a few laps. Sometimes they don't even start on the grid. What's the story there?
I'm not quite sure, you know, because some of these engines are quite good. I mean, Williams has had a Mercedes for many years. They just can't seem to know what to do with it. So, and Sauber is sort of mixed up right now. They're Audi, they're Sauber, you know, they got, at least they've improved their pit stops, but they are a mess.
Lap 5 was the big surprise for me. I was expecting Max to be in the top 5, but he was only 8th behind his BFF, Lando Norris. I have to say this, with such a big lead in the championship, one cannot say Max is under Lando's thumb, but the change has come for sure, and I must say much sooner than I expected. Lap 6, Lewis had a... This was interesting... Lap 6, Lewis had a Seb at Ferrari moment, reporting to the team, there's something moving down by my legs. Now, if you remember, Seb's message had a little funny bone to it, saying, there's something between my legs, apart from the obvious. So that's Seb and his German humor for you. Lap 10, and we all know Spa is a long lap, when Max still could not get ahead of Norris despite being in DRS zone. And that's hard to believe. I began to think of one of our favorite songs in the Palatial Studios. No package, no delivery, even if you are the greatest driver on earth or in heaven. And LCH, to rub it in, had the fastest lap at that time. At the end of lap 10, George and Russell in for tire change, which I thought was a little too early. Because, you know, I was not sure if they will do one or two laps. Race leader LCH in on the following lap. With Max not finding his mojo of winning from any starting position, this was looking LCH all the way, especially thinking everybody will do two laps or everybody will do one lap. But I think the talk was most of them will do two laps. Then came lap 26 and Lewis's second pit stop. On the other side of the garage or garage, his teammate went on the Chris Berman program. He could go all the way. Now that would be 34 laps on hard tires, and I thought by the end of the race, his tires and dishes will be done, especially by a rapidly closing LCH. But how wrong we all can be, Mr. Rogers. The best thing about this race was you just could not figure out who will win this race, and many drivers had the chance to take victory. I thought maybe the new change of tires will suit the Red Bull and Max and he'll come back strong. Same thing I thought with the McLaren boys. I was blown away that LCH for two laps could not pass George despite being within DRS range and on much fresher rubber. That was quite a statement made by King George, who is originally from King's Lynn in Norfolk, England, which is also the hometown of Megan Thee Stallion's BFF, Martin Brundle. Had he not been disqualified, George's victory would have gone down as one of the greatest in Grand Prix racing. It was absolutely unbelievable. And this is how I will remember it, despite the penalty. And coming at Spa, a real driver's track, that really was very special. I am not sure how much comfort he's taking after Toto singing to him another of our favorites. I'm sorry, so sorry. Let me tell you, brother, who I am feeling sorry for. And this is serious stuff. This chap once had a sniff of world championship by winning two of the first three races of the season. Then his rest of the season was done, blowed up. Next season, he will have the wonderful experience that Alonso had in 2007. That's what I'm talking about. LCH is coming to Maranello like Henley's witchy woman. Restless spirit on an endless flight. Let's see how high he flies on a prancing horse. Now, one of our favorites, Ennio Morricone, once upon a time composed a tune called Farewell to Cheyenne for one of Clint Eastwood's spaghetti westerns. Underline the word spaghetti. I think Leclerc should get on his Steinway and start composing his own melody, Farewell to Maranello. Moving on, what an amazing season we are having. 14 races and 7 different winners. 2 first-time winners, incredibly one driver from Red Bull does not have a win, but both drivers from Ferrari, McLaren and Mercedes have scored wins. Now, this news just came in. Checo will not get the Marco Machetti, which is good for him, so he can race in second part without any pressure. Just wondering, where did Max go so fast? He's not the only one in this regard. There was a lot of talk he will be chop-chop. Are you surprised that they have announced that they will keep him for the rest of the season? At least that's what they are saying.
I was very surprised. I thought for sure, you know, they were testing Ricciardo and Liam Lawson at Imola. There was all this chit-chat, and then I saw Carlos Sainz going to Williams. I'm going, well, that kills that theory. And I thought for sure they would wake up and give it to Liam Lawson, who's been waiting and waiting, and one day he won't be there anymore because he went walking. So I'm stunned, but I'm also happy for Perez. He'll go home and see his wife and children and maybe find his mojo.
Yeah, and I understand it's Liam Lawson's contract with Red Bull that they will put him in a Formula One car next season. So let's see how it works out. But I think keeping Checo basically means they really have no interest in putting Ricciardo at Red Bull. Would you concur on that?
I do concur. And once again, I think Ricciardo was counting on that wonderful text saying, welcome back, baby. But it ain't going to come.
Yeah. But like I said, I think it was last week, whoever goes as teammate as Max's, wingman, I have nothing but sympathy for them. But let's see how it works out. Well, going back some years ago, I thought Ricciardo will not do anything to Seb, and he went 3-0 against Seb. So you have to give the man or the woman the opportunity in the community to see what they can do in the race. But do you really think Liam Lawson will rattle the cage of Max Verstappen?
Of course not. But, you got to give him a chance.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, sir, now we come to what they say apart from smiling in your face. LCH, he said, and I quote, "Today the car came alive, and I was really surprised to, firstly, get into the lead and then be pulling away from everyone. It fell fully under control, and I've not had that for years." End quote. Now, here's the deal, as Mr. Perot would say. Some of us remember the 2008 Belgian Grand Prix, and this is in reference to LCA, the lucky getting lucky. So some of us remember the 2008 Belgian Grand Prix, when Hamilton won the race on the track but was given a penalty for not giving up the position to Kimi Raikkonen properly. Last I checked, Kimi did pass him, but Stewart had other ideas, so what goes around comes around. I shall never forget the comment from the race winner, Felipe Massa, and the race was in changing condition, and Kimi crashed out on his own. And Massa's comment was, I quote, "I was driving like a grandmother," end quote. Question I have is, did somebody say karma, and who could that be? Now we come to Lando Norris. Most agree, and you tell me if you agree with this, most people agree that McLaren has the fastest car now. Do you agree on that, Senor?
I do agree.
But somehow Mercedes have more wins than McLaren this year. This is my favorite part. The McLaren Q&A session during the race regarding pit stop and strategy is very interesting. Drivers may be young, but the team has a lot of race and championship winning experience, so it is kind of surprised number of issues / mistakes they are making. Lando started fourth and finished fifth. He said, and I quote, "I just tried to avoid any contact with people on the inside, and I just misjudged the curb, and then I bottomed out on the curb, and I've got off. So a bit stupid, honestly. Actually, it was embarrassing." End quote. Sir, I have a question for you. I think that Lando and Piastri is a very, very strong driver combination. How long before it turns into some ugly situation in your esteemed opinion?
Not very long, to be honest with you. As you notice, Piastri is getting better and better after every race. And Lando, you know, I think he does have some emotional issues. When Lando mentioned that maybe he should be declared number one for, of course, the team and get the world championship, you know, stuff like that's not going to be welcomed in the Piastri household. So it's going to get interesting as Piastri keeps edging closer, and often Piastri is a little quicker than Lando, so the car is working well for both of them. It's all going to be psychology.
Now we come to Mighty Max. Four in a row is pretty much a done deal as far as I'm concerned, because even Zak Brown said over the weekend that a bad day for Max is second or third, so a fourth or a fifth is a complete disaster. The Red Bull car is far from being a W13, but even Max has admitted winning races by 20 or 30 seconds. Those days are behind us. Is this the effect of Adrian Newey saying sayonara, and if this is their fate now, what will Red Bull and Max do in 2026 without him and without their wonderful GP2 engine? I will be very surprised if Max leaves Red Bull to join another team in 2025. The only team he can join is Toto's, you know, Mercedes-Benz AMG. I will be even more surprised if he is at Red Bull in 2026. As they say, time will tell. You have any thoughts on Max in 2026, Senor?
Ford, it's a better idea concept, is going to be under scrutiny closer and closer as we slowly inch our way to 2026. And Max does not like being in a regular car. If it's not dominant, he's not a happy camper. There's a lot of screaming, uncomfortable people. So, I don't know. If Red Bull cannot fix this lack of domination for the rest of the season, and Max comes out next year fighting for top five, it's not going to be good as all the teams are catching up. But, I don't know. I see Max thinking of moving on from Formula One and doing WEC or Le Mans.
Okay, next, Piastri. Dingo is going like a greyhound, which is what I fully expected after his championship-winning ways in Formula 2 and Formula 3. Mr. Brown has two lovely drivers, and I think it's just a matter of time before Piastri and Lando, and this is something we just discussed, go at each other like junkyard dogs during the race. We have seen this movie before in 1988 and 2007. As we all know, the favorite genre in the F1 Palatial Studios big screen is cage rattling. Yes, sirree, Bob, and I cannot wait for it. Okay, sir, now we come to wonderful Dr. Marco, what I call menudo de jour. This is what he said, Dr. Marco said about Checo, and I quote, Sergio had the opportunity to get a good result from second place on the starting grid. Unfortunately, it was not like that. In the last 10, he collapsed completely, setting lap times a couple of seconds higher than his opponents. 8th place from second at the start is not what we expected. Now for us, the situation is such that in the next few hours, we will address the issue with a view to 2025. End quote. And you know what? I am thanking Mr. Rogers. Since they have so quickly confirmed that he will stay, could it be an ironclad contract from his people? Because they are bringing a lot of money from Telmex, that, hey, you just cannot kick us out. There has to be something more than just, all of a sudden, we are very pissed off and unhappy about his performance, but we'll keep him racing till the end of the season. So do you think something more to this now?
Yes, we call it pesos, billions and billions of them. So, of course, it all comes down to brass tacks. That's why this meeting didn't take very long at all. Checo just took out his Carlos Slim membership card and said, "See, yo tengo." And that was the end of that conversation.
Okay, sir. With that, I think it's time for beverage break with some pineapple jaritos.
Okay, Nasser, good idea. Let me get the jaritos and we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, hello, I'm Jean Lizzy and you are listening F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Today we shall start Motorsports Mondial with a conversation with Miss Maria Guidotti. She is Media and Communications Manager at Mugello Circuit and was very helpful when I was there for the Formula Regional Europe by Alpine and the Italian Formula 4 races. Now, the Mugello Circuit, as we all know, is owned by Ferrari and is located in an area called Scarperia. And this is absolutely beautiful. I would highly recommend a visit if somebody is in the area. Maria also writes for Cycle World publication in the US and worked for MotoGP for many years. Best part is she very kindly and efficiently arranged an interview opportunity with the GOAT of motorcycle racing, Giacomo Agostini, aka the Great Ago. And he was the biggest name when I started following motorsports in the early 70s. So I'm really, really looking forward to the opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with him. I have already booked my flight to Linate. If all goes well, we shall meet in Bergamo, where he lives. And I'm told he has a museum in his house on Monday after the Monza Grand Prix. So many, many thanks for her efforts and time. And hope members of F1 Weekly family enjoy this conversation with Miss Maria Guidotti.
Okay, folks, I'm here in the media room of Mugello with Miss Maria Guidotti. Maria, good to meet you. How are you today?
Good, thank you, and nice to meet you, first of all. It's an honor.
Oh, same here. Italy has a great motor racing history, from Nuvolari to Ferrari, from Monza to Mille Miglia. How did you get the racing fever?
How I got it here, yeah.
How you got the racing interest in racing?
I got interest because I was like, it was kind of full immersion. I was studying foreign languages, history, philosophy, art, but I'm native from here, Florence, and specific Mugello. So I was fascinated by this international atmosphere. So if you study language and you have the possibility to speak with all the people involved, all the manufacturers, for me it was more, first of all, a human factor. And then, of course, once you are involved in racing, you start to know the whole world behind the scene. And I love it. I simply love it, yeah.
What was the first motor race you ever attended? Was it here at Mugello or some other place?
The first race was here in Mugello. At that time, there was the DCM, and then MotoGP. It was the time of legend like Mick Doohan. And for DTM, it was Nannini, Larini, Bernd Schneider, Norbert Haug, who was the team principal for Mercedes. And I was still a kid, so I was still studying at the university. And for me, it was an opportunity to see another world. And I felt that I belonged here.
Well, you are very right. Okay, now you are working at the Mugello circuit. How long have you been working here? This must be a dream come true because you said you're from this area.
Yeah, I started here because this was my first job here at Mugello. But then I wanted to discover the world. So from here I moved to MotoGP many years as a head of communication of some teams and then Formula One and then back here. They call me as a consultant when there was the Formula One in the year 2000 when we had this Gran Premio della Toscana Ferrari 1000 and then I think it was end of 2021. But also it gives me the freedom to continue as a journalist, as a freelance journalist, which is my first love, let's say, to do the Dakar Rally. So I have this opportunity to continue because I think the more you explore also in motorsport, the more you get the connection, the better it is for you and for the people who you work with.
You mentioned you work for MotoGP. There is this gentleman, Signor Giacomo Agostini, and you're going to help me get in touch with him in September. Is that correct?
Of course. I had the pleasure to interview Giacomo Agostini many times, also to be at his house in Bergamo, because he has a museum. So when he opened, he has a small museum in his house. So when he did the opening of the museum, he invited us as journalists, and I collaborated with Cycle World since 2014. And Giacomo, but the whole family, his wife Maria, is an amazing woman. His son.
She's Spanish, right?
She's Spanish. She's from the area of Jerez de la Frontera.
I've been there.
Of course. And he met her at Jerez, you know, during the Grand Prix. And I love Giacomo because he has so many stories from, let's say, an era that is so different from here, but in principle, the same things that the riders of today live are the same. You know, the nature is the same.
Yeah.
Of course, now we can say there is more safety, which is what counts and is most important for racing in general, for our sport.
I saw a beautiful picture of Giacomo Agostini when he got married to the Spanish lady. They were riding away and she was in her bridal dress on the back of his motorcycle.
Yeah, Maria, I love Maria because she's perfect for him. And of course Giacomo Agostini, you know, had it all, we can say. He was a handsome man, he was successful, all the talent. So, but with Maria it's perfect. Yeah, and with the passion, he's still, you know, it's always the same.
Now, you are a big Formula One fan. Mugello is owned by Ferrari. Do they give you a pass for the GP at Parco Monza?
For Monza, we need to see.
Okay.
Italian Grand Prix is always difficult because of all the Ferraristi, Ducati. Ducati and Ferrari are the big passion for Italy, but Ferrari number one. So Monza, you know, everything is red, of course. But we will be in Monza for sure.
Great. Okay, this is a Formula 4 weekend at Mugello. I am impressed by the number of cars in the parking lot. How big is the crowd when there is a MotoGP race here?
It can be around, this year was 140,000, if I'm not wrong. But during the Valentino time, Valentino Rossi time,
number 46.
Number 46, it was much more. All the heels were yellow, yellow and 46. The nice things about Mugello is that you can sleep inside the track, so it becomes a big camping. I say a Woodstock of the engine. So it's really a big party on and off track. And this year was a big success because thanks to the sprint race on Saturday, many people come for the sprint. So Saturday has become, in terms of numbers, almost the same of Sunday. You know, of course, is the highlight of the race. So we are very happy. Yeah.
Well, let's make a deal. If you get me a media pass for next year's MotoGP here, I will show up. Can you make that happen?
I will do much more for you. You will collaborate with me at Mugello for MotoGP.
Okay. Look forward to it with pleasure. Okay, now in 2020, during the COVID era, there was a Grand Prix here. Would you like to see Formula One come back to your circuit? Is that possible?
Of course. I mean, it was a special occasion, but also in the past, the circuit was offered to do the European Grand Prix. I remember it has been offered several times in the past, and COVID, I mean, because they had to do, for example, three Italian races in a row, for the logistic, it was the perfect moment. The drivers, they love the track. Consider that Max Verstappen comes to test here privately, usually July, August, when there is a break. He comes with an organizer from Netherlands. Hamilton also said it's one of the most beautiful track because it's so challenging. Leclerc loves Mugello. The question is, in terms of having a GP, there is a big picture to consider. You know, three GP in a normal condition is impossible. This is a private, I mean, it's owned by Ferrari, so it's something that has to be decided, agreed, supported by Ferrari, first of all. But I think three, consider how it's going in Formula One, that you have so many countries that wants to have a race, it's impossible to have three.
Okay. Tell us about your work. You said you're a freelance journalist. About your work for various publications in Europe and also USA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have alternated my job, like head of communication, like here in Mugello, I'm responsible for communication and press office. And then I love working as a journalist, so I'm collaborating, for example, for Cycle World, number one in America since 2014. I cover the Dakar Rally for La Gazzetta dello Sport, and I cover for them some races like WEC, or it depends, you know, if there are some good opportunities. Motorsport.com, Il Giornale in Italy for MotoGP, so I have collaborated for Autosport, so I love to alternate because you have a better understanding of the sport when you have covered different positions like an organization, team, and also journalist side.
I love Dakar Rally. Do you think Carlos Sainz Sr. will do well in a Ford?
Of course. I mean, Carlos Sainz Sr. is a great professional driver. He has a winning mentality. And every time I speak with him, I'm so motivated because he's so focused and he's so competitive. Of course, with Ford, he has to be also the right combination to have a car. Last year, Ford was already on the Dakar with a private team to do testing. Ford, we know, is a giant, so when they want to achieve things, they can do it. It's only a question if it will be 2025 or maybe 2026, but they have a great lineup.
Great. And Senor Sainz is also a very nice, decent human being, just like his son. Okay, that's good. Next, you also work for Sauber F1 team. How was that experience? And I understand Charles Leclerc was the driver at the time?
Yeah, I was head of communication of Alfa Romeo Sauber F1 team. My drivers were Marcus Ericsson and Charles Leclerc. Of course, it was the year that Charles made the debut in Formula One. But you could see that he's completely the champion mentality. I'm so happy when he was doing, also for his first win, and then one win after the other. Winning him in Monaco for him and for all of us was so great, because I know what it meant for him, what it meant in general for Formula One driver, but for him living in Monaco, and the promise he's done to his father. So he's a great champion, and I love it. And for me, it was an incredible atmosphere working at the best level with also like Bert Zander people and Fred Vasseur, people that I appreciate so much. And no, it was an amazing experience.
Bert Zander has been at Sauber for a long time, right?
He has been for so many years, already in the 90s. So he has been the team manager for so many years, and he's a great friend. He loves music, and he, of course, he knows everything about the sport.
Now, have you read Alex Zanardi's book?
I read the book, and I had the pleasure to meet him several times. I like how he thinks, how he approaches life. He's a true example for everyone.
Much more than an incredible, very determined human being. You know, the reason I asked, I was reading that book, and the funniest part was him writing that he called, trying to get a seat at Sauber, he mm-hmm. called Sauber, asked for Peter Sauber, mm-hmm. and when Peter Sauber got on the phone, first question he asked was, "Mr. Sauber, do you speak English?" And Peter Sauber hung up on him. Ah. Did you ever meet Peter Sauber, and yeah. your impression of him?
Yeah, working in Sauber, of course, he was coming to some races. He was coming in Hinwil to the headquarters. I like him because he's still humble, you know, and he's part of the history of Formula One, and I like him, you know. There is always the chance that you feel part of the sport with him. Yeah, and he is nice for a dinner to talk about the old times, some memories, some anecdotes. It's beautiful. And I love to talk with these people that embody the history of a sport.
Of all the racing drivers and MotoGP riders you have met, who really stood out as nice and friendly people?
I mean, each one is different, of course, and each one is the character. I remember from MotoGP, I can say, of course, the number one for me is Valentino Rossi, because I consider him as a complete rider. And he made a kind of revolution, because the way he was celebrating the victories, the way he was speaking with the media, supported by victories after victories and titles, 9 titles, but already when he was a kid in 125, he was able to make everybody love this sport. So even if you go in a restaurant, or my mother, my grandmother, they were watching MotoGP just to see Valentino. You go by the hairdresser and they follow Valentino. But then I love like people like Mick Doohan or Kevin Schwantz, Kenny Roberts. They belong to the history. Like Kevin Schwantz was kind of quite wild and heavy, crazy, but I love it, you know, because with the 500 they were doing things that now would be really difficult, you know, to do it.
One name you did not say, I want to ask you about him, Senor Marc Marquez.
Of course he's a champion. He makes the difference on the grid, because of course it's something, and I was speaking also with Ducati recently, and when they signed Marc Marquez, and then they said, you know, whether you love or you hate, but to be honest, his talent as a rider is unquestionable.
Yeah, very true. Okay, next, very important question I ask every Italian person I talk to. No Italian world champion since Alberto Ascari in 1953. Do you think Kimi Antonelli will change that? And he's here today.
He's here today. I spoke with him and we asked about, you know, his first victory in Formula 2 on the wet in Silverstone. He has the temper of a champion, how he looks and how he has evolved in such a few months, not since last year that they started this Mercedes Academy project, but really to prepare him for Formula 2. I see a huge difference not only in the body, in the muscle, also in his mentality. He's a champion. So yeah, to have him an Italian champion back is everybody's is looking for it.
I was a huge fan of Michele Alboreto, and I will never forget him winning the German Grand Prix in 85. And late in the race, his engine started smoking, but he still won. So I'm very hopeful. I'm hoping very much that Kimi will become a world champion. Okay, your favorite track in it?
One question more, because you asked me about MotoGP, but between Formula One, I wanted to mention a special thought to Niki Lauda, because he has made the sport. So, this is, of course, this year was the anniversary of Ayrton Senna, but to have Niki Lauda in the F1 paddock for so many years also has been a message for everybody.
You know, I'll tell you, I met him many times. I first met him at a test session at Brands Hatch in 1982. I could not believe how down-to-earth and simple. Mm. Just to give you an example, he came to the test in a rental car, and the car was a little Ford Escort. So he was a great guy. Okay, now, your favorite track in Italy and outside Italy?
Okay, in Italy, number one is Mugello. So, Mugello,
well,
Mugello.
We have our first disagreement. I prefer Monza, but that's fine.
Maybe you prefer Monza because for his history in Formula One. So I agree, but for me it's Mugello. Both the layout and the location, you know, in the hills, in the Tuscan hills, and the layout. Outside, for Formula One, I love Singapore because of the whole setting is amazing. I love the fans from Mexico City. And of course, I love Suzuka for the whole history, the challenges, the battles that have been done in Suzuka. MotoGP, I love Phillip Island because it's on the ocean.
Have you been to Phillip Island?
Yeah, many years. I've done almost 17 seasons in MotoGP. So.
Wow, very impressive. Okay, last question, very, very important. Italian fans have a lot of respect for Senna, even though he never drove for Ferrari. Do you think they will show the same amore to Lewis Hamilton next year?
Yeah, I think the Italian people were a little bit shocked when they signed. But, I mean, Lewis is a multiple champion. He's a rock star. He was one of the first. It's a good combination when you mention with Senna, because Senna changed the sport by expressing his feelings. You know, and he was the first one to give really comments that came from the heart, from his, even if there was, you know, sometimes very, you know, because of the battles and everything, there was a lot of discussion, but how he was explaining things was a revolution in terms of communication. And this is why he became a legend, because everybody could connect with him. For me, you know, if you ask me, I was a kid who was the Formula One driver. For me, it was Ayrton Senna, full stop. So, Hamilton, you know, with this battle he's doing, you know, for the principle, I think he's the one who used Formula One and his success as a platform to send messages. And I love this because it's a special platform. I love how his philosophy and everything. So I think the Italian will fall in love with him, you especially know, if he wins.
That's the name of the game. You know what really surprised me? When Michael Schumacher was racing for Ferrari and winning, one of our listeners went to Ristorante Cavallino, which is across the factory, Ferrari factory, and he told me there were more photographs of Senna than Schumacher. That just blew me away.
I mean, Senna is Senna. You cannot question it. Everybody loves. And Senna, as I spoke before with Valentino, everybody loves Valentino, even if they don't know about MotoGP. The same is for Senna, because everybody could connect with this hero, with this legend. But he was like a sweet legend, human legend. Even in his mistakes, he's a legend. Schumacher, I was here working in Mugello when Ferrari was testing a lot here, because there was no restriction about the days of testing, so they were coming almost once a month. And I can tell you that everybody loves Schumacher. I mean, how can you not love Schumacher? You know, he was a professional, and he was behind the scene much more human and very careful with the mechanics, with the team. He was really a team player. He was making the team unite. He was motivating the team more than what we can see from TV.
No, everybody says that, especially those who have worked with him. And I remember when he had Bridgestone tires and Michelin tires were doing better. Mm. He never threw Bridgestone under the bus. His comment was, "We win together, we lose together."
Mm-hmm. No, I think we say he's cold, he's German. No, I think he was more Italian than Italian. I mean, he was passionate and he was motivating the team. He had a special attention for each one of the team. I'm telling you a small story. We found here a deer, a baby of a deer. I don't know if you say Bambi. And I was taking care, giving milk to this Bambi in box garage number one. And when Ferrari was starting here with Schumacher, he was coming here every time to see the Bambi. And one day, I let the Bambi free, and was Schumacher walking on pit lane, and this little deer following him.
Really?
I hope that someone, if there is a photographer who made the picture, please send it.
Very interesting. Okay, finally, how about, we have listeners all over the world. Any message you have for our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I say come and see Mugello, because it's a great venue, 30 kilometers from Florence, so you can also visit Firenze and all the artistic beauty. We are in a valley, which is Mugello, so you can do agriturismo, B&B, and the track has remained the same from it's the 50 years of anniversary of Mugello. Since it's fixed facilities, but the first race was in 1914, when there was the old Mugello that was going on normal road streets from here to La Futa, so there was a 66.
Futa pass from Emilia.
Yeah, but also from the Mugello road circuit. So it's a lot of history. The track, the layout has been designed according to the hills, so to the geography of the terrain. So it's a beautiful track. Come and visit us.
Grazie mille.
Grazie mille.
Maria, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
Okay, sir. We shall go back to Spa for Formula 2 and Formula 3. In Formula 2, Zach O'Sullivan from Englandia was winner of the sprint race on Saturday. The feature race was won by your Frenchman, Red Bull Junior Isaac Hadjar, who extends his lead in the championship. His main challenger, Paul Aron, started from pole position and his car went kaput on the final lap. Brazilian Gabriel Bortoleto, who is a rookie this year, was second, and American ex-Red Bull Junior Jack Crawford was third. And Jack is still very young, is a very talented kid, and I hope he can make it to Formula One. Now we come to Formula 3. Sprint race winner Dino Beganovic, he is from Sweden and member of the Ferrari Driver Academy. Do you remember some years ago, Volvo used to run ads in this country? They would show a clip from British Touring Car Championship and they would show a Volvo station wagon in that race. Do you remember those ads?
Oh, of course. The Volvo wagon was in the tin tops. It was very popular.
Yes, and that car was driven by a Swedish driver, Rickard Rydell, and he is basically manager of Dino Beganovic, and I met him at Mugello, very nice gentleman. So and it's interesting, you know, motorsports people stay in motorsports. Okay, the feature race winner was English driver Callum Voisin. He won from pole position. And this Finnish kid, who is member of the FDA, Ferrari Driver Academy, Tuukka Tapanen, he also made his debut in F3 in place of Nikola Soloff. Okay, sir, now we come to the other big signing. I don't know if it's big, but at least the news is big. Ocon to Haas. They finally get a race-winning driver. It will be interesting to see how his on-track antics will be against his new teammate, Oliver Bearman. Ollie did a tremendous job on his debut with Ferrari in Saudi Arabia this year. So I am sure he will be competitive against Ocon and will not take any caca from him. Now, this was interesting. A senior member of the Alpine team, and actually the gentleman is Marcin Butkowski, who used to work for FIA also, he has disclosed they knew Ocon visited Williams' team as he was lay stupid to drive his company-provided car, which had a tracking device on it. So they knew his car was parked at Williams' facility for half a day. And speaking of Alpine, here is a shocker. More management changes at Alpine. The question is, when will this stop? Bruno Fama may be replaced by Oliver Oakes. He runs high-tech racing team in Junior Formula. Once upon a time, Ollie was a Red Bull Junior and karting world champion. And he last, you know, when Andretti got the entry in the F1 thing, his entry was also there. It was actually, it was with the financial support, if I'm not mistaken, with Pepito Mazepin. He's had some good business relationship with him. Also looking more and more likely that Alpine will be powered by Mercedes, possibly starting next season. And now there are rumors floating that they may do a collaboration with Cadillac, which will have nothing to do with the Andretti program. So I don't know what's going on, Alpine. I think they just should cut their losses, sell the team and move on and do whatever they want to do. You know, they have a team in WEC also. I mean, it's not like they're running right behind Ferrari or Toyota. So their whole project is not very impressive. They have a driver, a junior driver in Formula 3 by the name of Sophia Florsch. She's the girl, German girl, who had a huge flying accident at Macau some years ago. So I don't know who's running this program and making these decisions, but it's not a happy scene. Any thoughts, sir?
Yeah, it's getting a little bit bewildering. Renault is talking about dismantling Viry Châtillon, but in France, you can't just go around shutting companies down. And let's not forget, Alpine has always been sort of separate from Renault. They were in Dieppe. Renault was in Flins. They were always separate, and Renault liked having Alpine because they were, you know, the early years, it started with Gordini, and they developed the A106, A108, A110 back in the day. Of course, they were always using Renault stuff because that's what was going on with Gordini, but an Alpine with a Mercedes is still going to be an Alpine. It's just not going to be a Renault Alpine, so I'm a little confused on where they're going, but it's definitely looking like Renault is not going to be in Formula One much longer.
I remember Alpine 110 winning the Monte Carlo Rally back in the early 70s. You remember those glory days?
Of course, that's the peak. The 110 1300s, and you had the big 1600s. It was very exciting.
Yes, sir. Okay, now we move on to car 55. Where are you? The answer is Grove. The long wait is over. We finally know Carlito will drive for Williams next season. His choices were limited, but going from Ferrari to Williams is like going from the cockpit of 747 to the cockpit of TU-154. In life, you make decisions based on time and circumstances. Going from a sluggish McLaren to Scuderia Ferrari was a great move, and he has done a very good job for them. They have thanked him by showing the door, which is not very cool. At Williams, he will have to completely destroy Albon to be considered by any race-winning team for a seat in the future. So, sir, my take, this is not my wish, but just what I see how things are happening. I think it's going to be very difficult for Carlos Sainz Jr. and his current teammate Charles Leclerc to become Formula One world champion. What say you?
I agree. I think what seemed very possible and plausible is now slowly fading into the mist. Just like I remember when Ricciardo hit the scene, we all thought for sure he was world championship material. They come and they go. Ask Fernando. Happy birthday, Fernando!
Oh, yes. The double world champion. Okay, sir. Let's bring in Signor Luca Bedoer into the Palatial Studios. And shall we do that?
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yes, he is, and I thank him for his time at Mugello. His son is racing in Italian Formula 4, and I think he finished second that day, so he was very happy camper. And so please enjoy this conversation with ex-Ferrari racer and test driver Luca Bedoer, conducted at Mugello couple of weeks ago. Thank you.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Mugello with Luca, Senor Luca Badoer. Luca, good to meet you. How are you today?
It's a very positive day. My son did the second yesterday and today, so it's very good for the championship. He's scoring a lot of points, so everything is very positive.
And he also got his first pole position this weekend, right?
Yeah, this morning he did his first pole position, and this is another very positive point. We are always on the top of the position, so it looks really interesting.
Now, first question I have for you, how good is Brando compared to Papa at the same age?
I mean, it's really different. It's, the level of everything is much higher now, is much more professional, and is much more highest level. Obviously, I noticed this in all the sport, so it's something that changed overall. But in this contest, you can really feel a much big difference.
Yeah, and you know, it's very competitive now, but we also have like Red Bull program, Ferrari Driver Academy. For a young, talented driver, is it easier to get to the top level now or in your days?
No, it's more was more easy on my day because the level is very high and there are many drivers that are very quick. So you have less possibility. Anyway, Brando is optioned by McLaren and we see if he can get in finally in their program. That should be really positive for him.
Did the interest to become a race car driver came from himself or did you push him?
No, I didn't push. I didn't push because honestly, the motorsport, I did already 30 years and not happy to stay again to pass more time of my life in this ambient. But obviously, he wanna do and then I will support him as soon as possible.
Okay, Italy is the global center of karting. You were Italian karting champion. Can you tell us a little bit about your karting career and who were some of the drivers you raced against and any special memories you have, like you started a race 34th and won?
I start a bit late on go-kart and I was already 13. But at that time was not a problem. If a guy starts now at 13 years, it's impossible to follow up and have a career because as we said before, the level is impressive already from the go-kart. From the go-kart, you have a child with 9-10 years that already they are professional and they do everything to growing and go to the maximum point.
Now, between your karting days and your racing in Italian Formula 3, were there some drivers who also became professional like yourself? From the days of your karting and your racing in Formula 3, were there any other drivers who also became professional drivers like yourself?
I mean, yeah, many drivers. I mean, maybe a bit younger, a bit older, but there are some drivers that we did the step together with different choice, but they arrive anyway in Formula 1.
Any names you can mention, please?
There is Barrichello, there are Panis, Zanardi. I don't remember everybody, but many drivers anyway.
Yeah, Zanardi and all these names you take, David Coulthard also.
David Coulthard,
At that time or at that level of racing, between all these names we have just discussed, who do you think was the fastest at that time?
No, I don't know.
Okay. You did 31 races, I believe 31 races with Minardi. Obviously, small teams don't have the budget of major teams. How does a talented driver keep his motivation high when you know it's very difficult to get into the points?
I mean, a driver is a very strong person, and of course he want to get the result. If he drive, it's because he want to try to be on top, and this is the motivation. It's anyway, in Formula 1, at my time was much more different. Different from the top car to the last car was really important. And then to get point with small team was like to win the championship for other team.
Now, all your races in Formula One were with Italian teams. I understand you had an offer from Tyrrell also?
Oh, yeah, no, this was at the start. When I won the Formula 2 championship, I had some offers. One of the offers was also the Tyrrell, but I was supported by Ferrari and by Philip Morris, that they pushed me to choose the Scuderia Italia, that on the paper was a new project. In the fact, was really a disaster because the car was really slow.
So basically you had no choice but to go with the teams your sponsor said.
I mean, they was pushing for that, and then I have to listen. I mean, when Ferrari push for you one direction, you have to listen. Not that you can say it because you anyway you think in a support or in the future. But for sure the choice was wrong. If I choice Tyrrell was completely another career. But anyway, I'm happy of my of the one that I did, especially with Ferrari.
Okay, I was watching the last few laps of the 1999 European Grand Prix. You retired late in the race while running in the top five, and you got very emotional, one can understand. Was that the biggest disappointment from one race for you?
That one was a podium, not top five.
Oh, you were running third?
Yeah, it was a position three. It's part of the game. There is the driver and there is the car. And the car is very... There is the possibility that something break up. That was the case, unfortunately. Because the race was fantastic on wet rain. I managed everything in a perfect time. And then I was third. But this is the life. This is the motorsport.
Yes. Okay, you were a Ferrari test driver when Michael Schumacher was there, and I understand you had a good relationship with him. Can you talk about his commitment and dedication to motor racing and also as a person?
Of him?
Yes.
I mean, Michael is the best driver that I met in my life. He was a completely dedicated, very clever person. Very fast. He have all the points that a driver need to be the number one. It was really amazing. Something unhuman in a way. He was really strong, really good person. He is like my brother, and that's it.
Okay. When he broke his legs at Silverstone, he was replaced by Mika Salo. Did you have a discussion or a request with team management to give you the opportunity?
That was a Ferrari choice. I don't know why, and I don't have the answer for that. But that was the choice.
But did you ask them or request them to give you the seat?
It's not something that you ask. It's obviously, I was waiting for the seat, but they decide a different story.
Okay. That opportunity came to drive for Ferrari many years later when Massa had his accident in Hungary. Unfortunately, it did not work out for you. What was the biggest challenge you faced in those two races? Was it being out of the car for a long time or the new car, new tires?
The level of Formula One is so high that if you miss driving the car for some months, in that case, for me, was almost 1 year that I didn't drove the car. It's something that you put you out completely because I couldn't make tests. I just jump in the car and go. So I was absolutely not ready for that experience. But anyway, I know that. But I think everybody will accept in my place and take the risk, because drive for Ferrari anyway is a dream of every driver.
You know, most of the drivers were very supportive of what you tried or what you attempted, but unfortunately the press was not very kind to you. Did that bother you, or did you take it as business as usual, press trying to sell headlines?
I mean, I don't have the answer for this. I accept what it was, and it doesn't matter. I mean, I know what I did in my life. I know what was the circumstance, and the press for sure was heavy, but it's part of the work of the press.
Okay. Now, Olympics are special events at the, you know, at the Turin Olympics, at the opening ceremonies, you did donuts and a Ferrari? Donuts, you know, like you drive around, donuts and a Ferrari?
Yeah.
So was that a special moment for you that you cherished after Olympics?
The Olympics, it was amazing moment because we had a lot of preparation for that because it was in a very tight place, so I had to be very careful of what I was doing, but I did anyway the five circles, and it was perfect, but the atmosphere and everything was amazing.
Last question. Italy produced the first three of the four world champions in Formula One, but no Italian world champion since 1953. You think Kimi Antonelli will change that?
Kimi Antonelli is really a fast driver. He's a good talent. I hope he have the chance to show his talent. He's in a very good position now, and we wait and we see, but for sure he's one of the best Italian driver.
One last question, please. Your favorite Grand Prix track?
Spa.
That's what most people say.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You.
Great meeting you.
Luca, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Back to you, Nas.
Thank you, sir. Binotto is back. Audi F1 CEO Andreas Seidel and Audi board member Oliver Hoffmann. Apparently these two were fighting for control, and since they could not solve their problem, the Audi CEO, I believe the gentleman's name is Gernot Tollner, solved his problem by firing both of them. In comes Mattia Binotto, taking the job of both of them as chief technical officer and chief operating officer, and he will report directly to Herr Dollner. I think next to go will be their designer, James Key. He was brought in from McLaren. James Key has been unable to unlock the potential of their 2024 car, and Sauber is still pointless. And this is just, I think, is a pretty big signing. And one thing you do get with signing such a big name is and you know, he was at Ferrari for almost a quarter of a century. They know a lot of good people, right people, so I think there will be some decent talent rolling into Hinwil in Switzerland. Well, what will be the fate of Nico Hülkenberg? He won the Le Mans 24-hour race with Porsche when Andreas Seidel was there. He has a lot of experience, and I think Audi will take a lot of flack from German media if they let go of a homeboy and bring in somebody with marketing appeal. Do you think, sir, they will do anything with Nico, keep him, or who will be his teammate now that Sainz is not available?
Oh, I think Nico's locked in. There's no worries about there. He's German, and he's very talented, especially with the input in the engineering and technical side of the car setup and everything. Nico is the dude. So that's going to be fine. But yeah, there you go. To be honest with you, With today's engineers and Audi's success at Le Mans, I really thought that Sainz should have gone to Audi. They could be competitive out of the box. It's not that unusual for a mega motorsports company like them to be able to compete quickly.
No, I wish he had gone there too, but you know, we wish him well wherever he is. Okay, driver signing, Dries van Langendonk. Junior World Champion in Karting 2023 has been included in the McLaren Academy. He is from Belgium and from the town of Zolder, where the historic track is located, and where I was there with family member Mr. Louis this year, so that was fun. He is 13 years old and will continue in karting with the support of McLaren. But you know, speaking of McLaren young drivers, this American kid of Nigerian descent, Ugo Ogochukwu, man, this kid is so tall. I mean, it's very impressive. You know, he came through the system same time as Kimi Antonelli, but he's not performing at Kimi Antonelli's level, and we will keep an eye on him. He was also in the race I was at Mugello. And sir, you know what is interesting? When I go to Italy for the Signor Agostini interview, weekend after the Monza Grand Prix is a Formula Regional Europe, they call it Freca, so we just call it Freca. There is another round of Freca at Imola. And the host of FN Weekly has very kindly put in a request for a media credential. If all goes well, I will go to that race also and get some more interviews done. And then one of the things I want to do is go to, you know, the Ferrari has two museums. One is the Motor Racing Museum, and there is a museum tour of Enzo Ferrari's house, which you can see in the movie. So I'm thinking of maybe going there and also do a tour of the Maserati factory. And actually, news just came out today, this wonderful Stellantis corporation, they are not too thrilled with how the financials are working with Maserati. They may unload this brand. So let's see what that happens. Sir, are you ready for famous last words now?
I am. And if you go to Signore Ferrari's home, maybe you'll run into Penelope Cruz.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Va-va-voom. Good job, Nasser. Yes. Wow. I just want to tell everybody right now, there is no summer break for F1 Weekly.
There is no break for F1 Weekly. We just keep going every week, all year long.
You mean the Energizer Bunny should be our title sponsor?
Exactly. And you know what? We're closing on 1,100 podcasts.
More cake, more champagne.
So, but I'll tell you, any person I mentioned that we've been doing this 2005 and podcasting just started, and they're always surprised. That's a long, long time. I mean, we were young people. Now we are AARP members for a few years now. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. It's interesting that didn't even think about age in the early days because we were so full of energy, young and whippersnapper-ish.
Yeah, and now we have to think twice before getting up.
Exactly. So no, it's been a long journey, but the journey continues, Nasser. I want to thank all the hard work you do.
So with those wonderful words, we come to famous last words. Today they come from drivers' press conference before the Belgian Grand Prix. They were asked what they would have done if they were in Lando's shoes in the closing stages of the Hungarian Grand Prix. We shall start with Lance Stroll. Thank you for listening, and bye-bye.
Keep up the good work, Nas. Thank you. Good night.
The race for your teammates, as was the case last weekend. Would you have done that?
Difficult one.
That means...
difficult one.
I mean, it depends on the situation, but it would have certainly been tempting to hold on to it. But, you know, it totally depends on where you are with the team and what sort of history there is behind as well, I guess.
You've got some history with Lando.
Not that kind of history, for sure. We were not fighting for easy 1-2s at my time in McLaren. A team order is a team order, and I think the team always comes first. It's been... that way, the way I've approached my Formula One career over these last 19 years, and yeah, a team order, as much as it hurts, and it must have hurt to have let Oscar by, it's a team order, and yeah, and analyzing the situation, if they give you an undercut for free on your teammate, most likely than not, you need to let your teammate by, because if not, you wouldn't be in front of him if it wasn't for that undercut.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's these things like come around. I think the advice he was given was also, I think, good, because in the heat of the moment, you know, you don't kind of see it all, so to speak. It's like you see a win in front of you and that's it. But, you know, they're talking about championship and we win as a team and you might need Oscar's help and this and that. And I think that's kind of the perspective sometimes you need, I guess, in the heat of the moment. And yeah, that's a thing. Also, you, as Carlos said, it's a team game and you do need the team to help you. And there'll be times where, again, it comes around and it'll work in his favour. So as much as you don't want to hear it, of course, at times, and yeah, we're all here to win, I think long-term play, it's definitely the smartest one.
Valtteri, you've been in this exact situation.
Been there, mate. Yeah, it's...
Russia 2018?
There was a few.
Okay.
I've got this. You know, it's. I think everything being pretty much mentioned already, and agree that yeah, there's certain rules. Depends on the team, depends on the situation, but normally it comes back to you. So obviously, I would give the place back because I'm an amazing team player.
Any regrets?
Yes.
No. In my whole life, no regrets.